Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive. All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of America's Jobs Team. I am so glad you're here. This is Faye Davis, and today I am talking with Steve Jast, who is the president and CEO at Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. In today's conversation, Steve really dives deep into how 2020 affected him on a personal level and how it affected his team and how he helped guide his team through that. But he also talks about his father and his grandfather and their history being immigrants and the strength and resilience they have shown throughout their life and how that has impacted Steve. And Steve, because of the industry that he's in, has a really unique lens on economic development. So tune in for some really great insights on what we might expect in terms of deal flow this year. Let's listen in. All right. Welcome, everybody. I am here today with Steven Jast, who is the president and CEO at ROI, Research on Investment, and Gazelle AI. Steve, it's awesome to have you here. You know, you are a familiar voice on our podcast because you guys also sponsor us. But today, it is all about you and all about what you're seeing in the economic development world. But first, before we dive into that, I would love to know the path that you took to get into where you are. And it's a small question. What was your plan when you went to college? And really, how did you end up in the data and research sector with a focus on economic development?
Have we got an hour? No.
If you can do it, you know, quick.
Absolutely. First of all, thanks so much for inviting me to speak today. It's awesome to see you again, Faye. And you know, we're huge supporters of Consultant Connect and economics. And we think of the world of you guys and the programs that you run. So it really is my pleasure to be here today. And I hope everybody is happy and healthy at Consultant Connect. And I'm looking forward to a big year with you guys.
Yeah, okay. We love having you be part of it. So super excited to talk to you as well.
Yeah, great. So how did I get into this business? Well, when I went to university, my original plan was to go to law school. And I actually did a bachelor's degree in philosophy of all things. And people kind of chuckle about that and they wonder why. But at the time, I was studying things like logic of legal reasoning, philosophy of law, natural law, business ethics, biomedical ethics. So I thought that these courses really lent themselves nicely to an undergraduate degree that would then further my career in law. And I actually took a couple of first year law courses. And when we got into the casework and reading about all the judges' opinions and dissenting opinions, and it was a lot of reading. It wasn't the reading that turned me off from the profession, but once I got into the reading and once I got a better understanding of what a life would be like as a lawyer, I kind of grew a bit less interested in that profession as a lifestyle. And so I had a bunch of friends who were traveling around Africa at the time, actually, and I wanted to join them. So I needed to make some money, and I needed to make some money fast to go and meet up with them. So I took a job as an account executive at an advertising firm. I really had no real aspirations to be in the advertising industry, but they put me into sales. And I guess that's really where I found my niche. And I was fairly good at selling. And one of the accounts that I opened up was with a site selection consulting group who was just getting into business. And I knew that they were looking to hire a consultant and a marketing person. So I raised my hand to be their marketing person, thinking, you know, coming from advertising make more sense. And they said, no, be a consultant, you know, get into the site selection world. And I went back to university and studied finance. And the rest is history. I was a site selection consultant and very much an incentive negotiator for 12 years. And a lot of the folks in the economic development community would contact us to ask us which companies that we knew to be in expansion and growth mode, as they still do now. And we figured that it would be an interesting endeavor to start up a research practice that would study the trajectory of corporate investment at the firm level and then sell that business intelligence back to economic development professionals such that they can make their lives as it related to business attraction and business development a bit easier. And in 2001, we started it up inside the site selection firm. And then in late 2002, I spun that company off. So it started out as myself and two part-time people with a very, very small loan from my dad that basically gave me a runway of about 6 months. And my dad said that if I didn't make it happen in 6 months, I better refresh my CV because that was all the money he was giving me.
And I was going to say that, but that's awesome. It puts the pressure on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you learn how to run a lean organization.
Yes, 100%. I do have one real quick question. Did you ever make it to Africa with your friends?
You know, I didn't. I didn't at all because my life just took on a completely separate trajectory. I started with the advertising agency and after 3-4 months, I met, the site selection firm. And then I ended up staying there for 12 years and becoming a partner there. So, you never know what twists and turns life's going to throw your way. You sort of got to be a bit agile. But I did make it to Africa. I went to Africa for my honeymoon.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. See, that's awesome. But it just, your life just moved in a completely different way. Same end goal-ish, but you took a different path.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and so now we're in artificial intelligence, which is a whole other life trajectory that,
We're going to get there. We're going to get there because I've got questions for you. But first, you mentioned your dad gave you a small loan with a very, in business, 6 months is not a long time. So with a very, like you called it, a short runway. What, and it reminded me of a question I wanted to ask, what role have mentors played in your journey?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And the timing of your question, given that I was talking about my dad, is perfect because I knew that you were going to ask me that question. And I was thinking, who really were important mentors to me? And I think that as a person progresses through their lives, they have different mentors and different mentors can become important for different reasons.
Yeah.
But and there's definitely a lot of names and faces that popped up in my mind's eye as I was thinking about it. But really my dad, I think truly is my greatest mentor for a lot of reasons. My father was born in Poland right in the outbreak of World War II when the Germans were attacking from one side and the Russians were attacking from another. And my grandfather, who was a captain in the Polish army and a law student, was called up into duty and subsequently put into a concentration camp, a slave labor camp for 3 years. And so, when you have a bad day at the office and you lose a contract or you think you're having a bad day, I sort of think back to how my father grew up and being a displaced person and moving from country to country, learning different languages as a child. Ultimately making their way to Canada when my father was the last year of high school. They knew nobody here. And he persevered and he worked hard and he put himself through medical school and he did what he had to do to give his children, myself and his family, a better life than what he had. And so I think of my dad and I think of hard work, perseverance, family. And that really keeps me motivated. And I like to think that anybody who puts in the time and the effort, ultimately that will pay dividends and that will come back to you in a positive way. My father always says that he was never the most gifted natural student. There's some people who just have these unbelievable photographic memories and they can read a textbook of anatomy and just, reel off every muscle and every tendon and every ligament. And he had to work at it. He had to really work at it to be at that level. So I would say that my dad, given his perseverance, making it through the difficulties of his childhood and adolescence and teen years and coming out the other side, of having made a wonderful contribution to society. He's 82 years old and he's still practicing medicine.
That's amazing. Steve, yeah. I'm so intrigued with your story and with your father and your grandfather. I want to dive deeper into that, but we just don't have the time today. But I love that story of like perseverance and resilience and, that strength that they came up with for their families. And that is amazing. And you're talking about, they went through really tumultuous times. 2020 for us was, in our modern day world was a really tumultuous time as well. And you are in Canada and we don't often on this podcast get to hear kind of, that we do have a lot of US listeners here. And it's not often we get that outside perspective. So I kind of want to pick your brain on, how did you experience 2020? What is the biggest challenge you faced throughout the year? How did you lead yourself through it? Anything that comes to mind there?
Right. You know, I haven't been to the U.S. in about a year now, since last February. I went to Kentucky. That was my last time that I was on a plane. And I'm a person who's used to being on an airplane probably, you know, twice a month or so. But that's not really the answer to your question.
No, but it plays into it, definitely.
Yeah. But so how was the experience in Canada? And what was my personal experience? We went into lockdown very quickly here in Canada. So as of, I think, last March, April, I mean, it's all a bit of a fog now. But there were sort of escalating measures, which sort of culminated in you not being allowed to have anybody in your home that doesn't live in your home. You can't go visit anybody else. You know, you weren't even allowed to see elderly relatives in their, you know, where they were living, whether it be in some sort of a convalescence home or an old person's home, et cetera. So it was extremely difficult. The rules eased up a bit over the summer when people can get outside and the virus wasn't as transmissible as it was now and when people are really more indoors. And then we've seen the second wave. So we've had the second wave of transmission, an aggressive second wave in the same way that you have in the US. So we're now back in full lockdown mode. So we're not allowed to go to anybody's homes, anybody's offices, unless you're an essential worker. You can't leave your home. All the stores are closed except for essential services again. And we even have a curfew now, which is starts at 8 o'clock at night until 5 o'clock in the morning. So they've been pretty tough here in Canada as it relates to that kind of stuff. You can't go into public without a mask on. There's security guards at all malls and, you know, every public place. You don't have a mask, you're sent home. But it's a tough situation. You know, I've often sort of had that debate in my head, is the solution worse than the disease itself? And human life is precious. There's really nothing more important than human life. So, you know, it's a fine line. It's a fine line, you know.
It's a hard situation, you know. There's that double-edged sword. You're saving the human life, but what's happening to the mental condition?
And exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It sounds like you can see both sides of the coin. So kind of in that vein, how do you lead yourself through tough moments like this? You know, how are you taking care of your mental health? How are you making sure you're staying motivated for yourself, for your family, and for your organization?
Right. Well, we were affected as a business. So I'll talk about my business and then myself personally, I guess.
Sure.
So the first thing that we did in early March, late February, I guess, when COVID cases started to get announced in Canada, is we shut down our office right away. We shut it down even before the government required us to shut it down. And we were very lucky, because a lot of the work that we do is through telephone surveying, email. And so we had a lot of those technologies already in the office whereby people could work remotely. Everybody had VPN connections from home. Everybody had sort of VoIP connections for their telephones so they could access, you know, phones through internet lines. So the transition for us to go from working in the office to working remotely was very easy. That happened from one day to the next. Now, efficiencies, productivity, morale, we knew that those things could be a bit trickier. So initially, we didn't take much of a hit on the productivity and on the efficiency side. But after a couple of months, we started to see some declines from that end, from that front. And so we wanted to, right from the beginning, but even a couple of months in, not just because of the business, but because we needed to take care of our people. If people are not feeling well and secure, they're not going to be able to perform optimally. So number one, we wanted people healthy. And number two, we wanted the business to be healthy, because if the business is not healthy, then that causes another kind of anxiety for everybody. So we knew that everybody was anxious. We knew that there was a large degree of anxiety. And what's anxiety? It's not knowing what an outcome is going to be and projecting negative outcomes into the future that we're not really very sure about. So we as a business decided that we needed to keep our staff very much informed about what was going on to ease anxiety levels, make sure people were healthy mentally. So we started to deploy daily Zoom huddles. We then went from daily to twice weekly, because every day was a bit much. Some people thought that was a bit much. And so twice a week, the entire company gets together on a Zoom call, and we started to try and do fun things. So we would have contests, you know, favorite TV show lists. We had the company build a music list. We had the company build a menu of their favorite foods they like to prepare. And then we sold that cookbook to raise money for charity. So we
love that. Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah. I wish it was my idea, but it wasn't.
That's okay.
I wish I could claim those. So we tried and we continue to try to, you know, create these opportunities for everybody to get together online, share, you know, things that they're feeling. It's not the easiest environment on a Zoom call with all your colleagues there, but we make it very clear. If you need time for yourself, if you need to speak to any of the senior leadership in the company, it's a given. Don't even think twice about it. In fact, I'd be upset if I learned that somebody was coming to work and they were living through some kind of a difficulty that they, I don't need to know people's personal lives to want to be able to help them. I know not everybody's comfortable to talk about their personal lives, but if you're suffering, I'd like to know so I can help. And so I can create an environment for you where you feel better. So that's what we did. We just really wanted to, you know, ease the anxiety level. So we told people how the business was doing, how business development was going, how revenue generation was going, because of course, other than the pandemic itself, people are worried about their own personal situation. So we had a few people who started to feel a bit, you know, depressed and so forth, and we tried to help them as very much as we can. And I think it's also important as a company leader to be honest. There were certainly moments over the course of last year where, you know, I was teetering on, you know, how do I get out of bed today? You know, how do I not stay on the sofa all day today? Do I shave today? You know, am I going to wear the same t-shirt I wore yesterday? And then it's a slippery slope from there. And I definitely went through that. I definitely went through days where I really had to drag myself out of bed for weeks on end and get to the computer here and just force myself to work because it was really the last thing that I thought I could do. You know, one more day sitting in this chair, in this room, was starting to really affect me. So I could imagine it was affecting everybody else.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love how candid you're being about that because it's one of those things that I think everybody has had moments like that over the last year. And it's just not talked about very much, especially people in a senior leadership position like you are, for them to admit and say, you know what, this is tough. And we're going through a really hard time. And I am also struggling. So I appreciate you sharing that. I kind of want to flip our focus to look ahead for this year. And you're in a very unique position because you also lead Gazelle AI, which is a company that kind of looks at a company's likelihood of expansion. It's based on a bunch of intricate metrics. And I wanted to ask you, are you seeing more companies push into that higher likelihood of expansion, or are they dipping the opposite way into that lower likelihood of expansion? Like, what are you seeing in terms of what might affect deal flow for economic developers in the future?
You want to know my personal opinion on that, or you want to know what the AI is telling us about that?
Both, especially if they're different. But what are you guys, what trends overall are you seeing in terms of company expansion compared to like what was normal, quote unquote?
Normal, yeah, sure. So we have two companies that we run, ROI, Research on Investment, which is the service side of the business, whereby we reach out to companies and try and establish if they're in expansion mode. And if they are, we then try and broker an introductory meeting between that company and an economic development organization. Gazelle is a data platform. Mm-hmm. So on the ROI side, there's certainly been about a 30% decrease in the number of projects that we're typically finding. So we're needing to do 30% more research, more executive surveys to find the same volume of projects that we've been finding in the past. So there's certainly less of them. And I think when you look at the data, FDI is down significantly. In fact, just doing some of the reading that I've been doing lately, reshoring jobs have outnumbered FDI greenfield jobs for the first time in 7 years in the US. So I think we're definitely seeing a trend towards regionalization. We're seeing a trend towards, you know, trying to build local ecosystems, local startup ecosystems, and we're trying to kind of repatriate as much of the supply chain that we need in major industries and trying to clog up some of the supply chain and cluster leakage that we're seeing. So I think there's going to be probably a focus on that, There'll be a focus on last mile logistics due to the, I think, you know, the proliferation of e-commerce and digital commerce that's going on.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because my next question was actually going to be about a supply chain analysis.
Okay, right.
Because I know that Gazelle has just a fantastic, fantastic supply chain analysis. And so I was going to ask you about that kind of consolidation of the logistics.
Right. So as a platform, you know, we have 900 industries and we show the buying and selling ecosystem of those industries. And then we show the companies that could be likely suppliers or buyers of goods and services in any industry. And we were giving that data away on a complimentary basis to economic development professionals. And we still are, by the way. If anybody would like to access that data for their own needs, just give us a call or hop on our website and we'll get you set up with that. So with that particular, and I don't want this to turn into a Gazelle infomercial, but I mean, there has been a lot of interest, not necessarily in Gazelle, but there's been a lot of interest in supply chain data, you know, because I think that a lot of industries, PPE, healthcare, come to mind, at first top of mind, are going to be industries that are going to want to maybe to a degree abandon just-in-time manufacturing and start keeping larger inventories of the goods that they need for manufacturing. And obviously, there's going to be a huge need for different kinds of healthcare-related products, particularly as it relates to the vaccine. And I understand that there's little plastic tips that go on the testing. There's all kinds of little pieces that are tough to come by now. So I don't know if I answered your question.
No, it's great. I love, and it just, it's so indicative of how passionate you are about the industry that you're in and the work that you do, but it's great information. And it doesn't sound like an infomercial at all. It just shows that you really know what you're talking about. And it's intriguing to me to have your point of view, because you work with economic developers, but you have just a different lens on it. So just, you know, you come at it from a little bit of a different angle. So let's pivot back more to your personal leadership. And I would love to know what the best advice is that you have ever been given by anyone.
It's funny, you know, we talked about my mentor being my father, and I was talking about the best piece of advice that I got. And that was probably a piece of advice that my mother gave me. And it was when I was starting my career. And I really, when I sort of became, I guess, disillusioned is a bit strong, but when I lost interest really in becoming a lawyer, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And so I just took this job at advertising agencies, I mentioned a bit earlier, just to make some money so I can go travel. Which I didn't do. but I never really aspired to a career in advertising. So I was feeling a bit, I don't know, I was a young man still, but I was still feeling a bit confused. I didn't really have a path I knew that I was for sure going to follow. And my mom said, listen, Steve, just go get a job. And quite honestly, it doesn't really matter what the job is and what industry it's in, because if you work really hard and you're successful at it, eventually you're going to be able to navigate towards what you really want to do. And that gave me a great sense of ease. You know, I didn't have to choose right then and there what career path I wanted to take. And I could just go and get a job and know that if I work really hard, that things will work out well.
Yeah.
And they did in that sense. You know, I took a job at an advertising agency. I worked really hard. I caught the eye of somebody who was starting up a site selection firm. And that work, I wrote the brochure for that company, and the work looked really fascinating to me. And so what my mother had told me really panned out. I was able to get a job there and move up the ranks of that company. And then ultimately, I knew that I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And again, the opportunity presented itself when we were going to spin off ROI. And I raised my hand and said, I'd really like to do that. And that opportunity was afforded to me as well. So I think the best piece of advice that I got is, especially for young professionals, is don't sweat so much having the perfect career trajectory and making all the perfect choices. Just work really hard. And eventually, you know, if you play your cards well and life sort of, you know, exposes itself in a natural way, you're slowly going to make your way over to what you really love.
Yeah, I love that. That's such great advice, because a lot of us especially on the younger end, we see where we want to be. And that what you just said gives so much peace, because when you start and you work hard and you show that you are, you know, you've got that great work ethic, there's always going to be those opportunities, and you have the chance of like either staying the course or veering off a little bit closer to your goal. Right. So your mother's advice is amazing.
Yeah. There's another, are we still, because there's another piece of advice that I got that played a huge role in my life, but it has a little bit more to do with getting your first job. And you know, getting a toe in the water. So before you can even work hard and start veering towards your job, you got to get a job. And it was my college roommate's sister who told me, you know, when you're looking for a job, don't call up an organization and tell them you're looking for a job, because if there's no job available, you know, you're just going to get hung up on. Strategy that I used to get the job at the advertising agency was to say that I was very interested in advertising. It was my passion to get a job.
Hey.
but I would love to find a job in the advertising industry. Now, I don't know if you're hiring or not, but I would love to just come by your office and hang out for a day if you would allow me to, so I can just hear some of the jargon and see how the operation works, and such that if I ever do get an opportunity in the industry, I'll kind of know how it works. And so the person that answered the phone said, yeah, I don't mind if you want to come by. And she muttered under her breath, I'm interviewing on Monday and Tuesday. You want to come Wednesday? And I said, did I hear you say you were, you know, interviewing? And she said, yeah. And I said, for what position? She said, business development. And I said, well, I know, as you clearly know, I know nothing about advertising, but I'd love to be considered for the job. So lo and behold, I got the job. I'm a bit of a firm believer in, well, you can't be a bit of a firm believer. I'm a firm believer that you can make your own luck. And that company ended up being a division of Omnicom, which is, I think, the third or fourth biggest advertising PR conglomerate in the world. So I ended up going to work there and, you know, getting exposed to huge accounts with, you know, companies like Ericsson and global multinationals. And I learned a ton. And that's what sort of got me to meet, my mentors in site selection and set me on my path that I'm on now.
I love that. Steve, I really appreciate you not only sharing your own journey and, you know, by way of your father and your grandfather giving us insight into in real strength and resilience, but also sharing these amazing pieces of advice for emerging leaders. And I'm so grateful for the time you have spent with us. And it's been really a pleasure talking with you, learning more about you, and thank you for that.
Well, thanks, Faith. It's my pleasure. It's been a lot of fun. And, it's too bad we got to, end now. But I understand, the podcast can only go so long. But anytime you want to chat, let's do it again.
All right. I'm game if you are. So
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
We didn't talk much about the economy or economic development, but another time.
Yeah, it sounds like you and I could have a conversation for a really long time. So in the interest of time, thank you for today. And we hope to talk to you again on a future podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much. And keep up the great work at Consultant Connect. And look forward to, again, working with you guys for the coming year.
Thanks for sticking with us to the very end. And again, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. The America's Jobs Team podcast releases episodes every week that are specifically curated for economic developers like you looking to stay in the know about industry trends, leadership development, career management, growing high-performing organizations, and so much more. So don't forget to subscribe. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Podcasts, or really any other preferred podcast outlet that you use. America's Jobs Team is audio engineered by Joshua Wieters and produced by Faye Davis.